Have you ever, you know, just looked up at the sky and wondered why it's blue? Or maybe watched a tiny seed somehow become this huge tree?
Or even just thought about what's actually making your phone work?
Exactly. Those little everyday wonders. They're really invitations, aren't they, into this massive interconnected world of science.
And that world is built on curiosity. That's the key.
Which is perfect, because for this deep dive, we're recapping the core ideas from Chapter 1, The Ever-Evolving World of Science.
Right, and the goal here isn't just listing facts. It's about digging into science as this dynamic process, you know, asking questions, exploring.
It's sort of a shortcut, giving you that insight into how it all actually fits together, how science shapes, well, everything.
From the biggest galaxies way out there.
Down to the microscopic stuff happening inside our own bodies. It's all connected.
And we really want to underline how crucial that curiosity, that questioning is. That's the engine of science.
Well, look at how different fields link up and, importantly, how science impacts our daily lives, society, the environment, all of it.
Yeah, seeing the science in the everyday. Ready to jump in?
Let's do it. First up, science explores the vast and the minute. It's easy to think science is just memorizing stuff.
Oh, absolutely. But the material makes it so clear. It's really not like that at all. It's a way of thinking.
A way of understanding the universe that's constantly evolving.
Yeah. Think about the history. Early humans looking at stars to navigate or figuring out which plants were medicinal. That was science starting.
Then you had ancient astronomers in Egypt, Mesopotamia. Philosophers like Aristotle trying to classify things.
And then, bam, the scientific revolution. People like Copernicus, Galileo, Newton.
They didn't just find new facts, did they? They changed how we investigate.
Yeah.
Systematic experiments, math.
Exactly. That whole approach really defined modern science.
Yeah.
And the scope. It's just immense.
Truly. From galaxy clusters bound by gravity.
All the way down to quarks and electrons. Stuff we can't even properly picture. Science tries to grasp it all.
Okay, let's zoom right down to that tiny scale, the microscopic world. Microscopes really opened up a whole new reality, didn't they?
Completely. Suddenly, we could see this entire realm hidden from view. And the biggest discovery, the cell.
The basic building block of life.
Well, yes, but it's more than just basic. Cells are incredibly complex little factories. They're the foundation for everything alive, from bacteria to blue whales.
And here's a quick fact flash for you. Your own body has something like 30 to 40 trillion cells.
It's staggering.
And millions of them are being replaced every single second, right now.
It's constant renewal. And think about the different types of cells, plant cells, animal cells.
They're different, right? Plants have that sturdy wall.
Right, the cell wall for structure and those chloroplasts, little green powerhouses for photosynthesis. Animal cells are generally more flexible, no wall. Different jobs, different designs.
Makes sense. Now here's something important, a common misconception alert.
Yeah.
Just because something's tiny doesn't mean it's a cell.
Uh-huh. Like viruses. They're microscopic, sure, but they aren't really alive in the same way. They can't reproduce on their own. They need a host cell.
So they lack the machinery.
Exactly. Or think of dust specks or tiny salt crystals. Microscopic, yes. Cells, no. It's a key distinction for understanding life.
Okay. Moving from life to, well, stuff. Properties of materials. How science helps us understand the things around us.
Yeah, and it breaks it down into two main types of properties. Physical and chemical.
So physical properties, that's the stuff you can see or measure without changing the substance itself.
Precisely. Like the color of gold, the smell of vinegar, the density of lead, water's boiling point, how hard a diamond is.
Or just whether water is liquid, solid ice, or gas steam. It's still H2O.
Exactly. The chemical identity stays the same. It's more about the form or state.
But then you have chemical properties. That's about potential. How it might change.
Right. How a substance reacts with others or its ability to transform into something new, like wood's ability to burn, that's a chemical property. Iron's tendency to rust.
Or the sour taste of a lemon.
That's the citric acid, yeah. Its chemical nature causes that taste and allows it to react with bases.
Which brings us to that cool turmeric example, that yellow spice.
Curcumin. It's a natural indicator. Its chemical property is that it changes color in response to acids and bases.
So you get it on your counter and use soap, which is basic.
It turns that reddish-brown color. That's a chemical reaction happening.
And if you added lemon juice, an acid.
It might just turn back yellow. Another chemical interaction. It's chemistry you can see in your kitchen.
That's pretty neat. And understanding these properties helps us classify materials, right? Like metals versus nonmetals.
Absolutely fundamental. metals. Generally shiny, good conductors of heat and electricity. You can bend them or draw them into wires. Think copper, iron, aluminum.
Malleable and ductile.
Right. Non-metals, often dull, poor conductors, insulators, maybe brittle, like wood, plastic, sulfur.
And knowing this is crucial for, well, building anything. Choosing the right stuff for the job.
Definitely. You wouldn't make wires out of rubber or a frying pan handle out of copper.
Okay, another common misconception about here. Color change. Does it always mean a chemical change?
Good question. No, not always. While many chemical changes involve a color change, like rusting or burning.
You could just paint a wall. The color changes, but the wall's still chemically the same wall.
Exactly. Or heating a piece of metal till it glows red hot. It changes color, but when it cools down, it's still the same metal. That's a physical change related to temperature. You have to look deeper than just the color.
Got it. So this leads nicely into how science explains changes around us. The world is always in flux.
Constantly. Things grow, decay, move, transform. Science gives us the tools to make sense of it all.
To classify the changes, understand why they happen, maybe even predict or control them.
And a lot of the time, the driving force behind change is energy, especially heat energy.
Right. Heat in its role. So heat isn't a substance, it's a form of energy.
Correct. And it causes things to happen. It can raise the temperature of something, obviously.
It can cause a change of state, melting, boiling.
Yep. It can make materials expand. Most things get slightly bigger when heated.
And it can speed up chemical reactions, like when you cook food.
Exactly. Heat gives molecules more energy to move around and react faster. So how does this heat energy actually travel?
Ah, the transfer methods. Three main ways, the sources say.
First is conduction. That's heat moving through direct contact, molecule to molecule. Works best in solids.
Like when you leave a metal spoon in hot soup and the handle gets hot.
Perfect example. The heat conducts up the spoon.
Okay, second.
Convection. This happens in fluids, liquids, or gases. The warmer, less dense part of the fluid rises and cooler, denser fluid sinks, creating a current that carries heat.
Like boiling water circulating in a pot. Or warm air rising from a heater.
Precisely. It's all about the movement of the fluid itself transferring the heat. Weather patterns are heavily influenced by convection.
And the third one is different. Radiation.
Yeah, this one doesn't need any matter to travel through. Heat travels as electromagnetic waves, like light waves. It can go through empty space.
So the heat we feel from the sun, that's radiation. It travels across millions of miles of vacuum.
Exactly. Or the warmth you feel standing near a bonfire, even if the air between you isn't hot, that's radiant heat.
Conduction, convection, radiation. Got it. And a fantastic example of heat driving change on a massive scale is the water cycle.
Oh, absolutely. It's this huge, continuous process of physical changes, all powered by the sun's heat energy, vital for life.
Let's walk through it quickly. Starts with evaporation, right? Sun heats up water in oceans, lakes, rivers.
And then turns it into invisible water vapor, a gas which rises into the atmosphere.
And plants contribute too. Transpiration.
Yep. They release water vapor from their leaves. Adds quite a bit of moisture to the air.
Then as that moist air rises, it cools down.
Leading to condensation. The water vapor turns back into tiny liquid water droplets or ice crystals forming clouds.
And when those droplets or crystals get heavy enough?
Precipitation. They fall back to Earth as rain, snow, sleet, or hail.
And then it all gathers back up. Collection in rivers, lakes, oceans, groundwater.
Ready to start the whole cycle over again. It's incredibly elegant.
Here's a mind-bending fact slash related to that. The water you drink today, it could literally have been part of the water a dinosaur drank millions of years ago.
It's the same water, just constantly recycled. Amazing.
Okay, quick common misconception alert on this. When water boils into steam, it hasn't been destroyed, right?
Absolutely not. It's still H2O. It's just changed its physical state from liquid to gas. The mass is conserved. It's a physical change.
Same with dissolving sugar in water. Usually physical.
Usually, yes. The sugar molecules spread out in the water, but there's still sugar molecules. You could evaporate the water and get the sugar back. Physical change.
Makes sense. Okay, let's broaden the view again. Science investigates life and our planet. It's not just about non-living stuff.
Not at all. Biology, earth science, these fields look at living organisms and the complex planet that supports them. It's all interconnected.
So what are the absolute basics? The essential life processes shared by living things?
Well, they all need energy and materials, nutrition. Plants make their own food via photosynthesis. Animals eat things.
They all release energy from that food. Respiration is not just breathing. It's cellular energy release.
Right. They exhibit growth and development. They change over time.
Some kind of movement. Yeah. Even plants move, just slowly.
Uh-huh. Reproduction, making more of their kind. Excretion, getting rid of waste products.
And in many animals, circulation, moving substances around the body.
These fundamental processes define what it means to be alive. And they all happen within Earth's larger systems.
Ah, yes. Earth's dynamic systems. The planet itself isn't static.
Far from it. We talk about four major interacting spheres. The atmosphere, the layer of gases.
The hydrosphere, all the water.
The lithosphere or geosphere, the solid Earth, rocks, soil.
And the biosphere, all the living things.
And the key point is they interact constantly. The water cycle we just talked about, that links the hydrosphere, atmosphere, lithosphere, and biosphere. It's all connected.
Which leads to this deeper concept, ecosystems and interdependence. It's not just random interactions.
Exactly. An ecosystem is a community of living things, biotic factors, interacting with each other, and their non-living environment, abiotic factors like sunlight, water, soil.
Think food chains. Plants capture energy.
Herbivores eat plants. Carnivores eat herbivores. Decomposers break down dead stuff, returning nutrients. Everything depends on everything else.
So if you mess with one part,
it can have ripple effects, sometimes huge ones, throughout the whole system. It's a delicate balance.
Which brings us, inevitably, to human impact and sustainability.
Yeah, the material is clear that our activities, pollution, habitat destruction, climate change are putting major stress on these natural systems.
And sustainability is about figuring out how to live, how to meet our needs now.
Without wrecking the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. Science is absolutely crucial for understanding the problems and finding solutions.
Let's hit a couple of common misconceptions here. First, plants. Do they only photosynthesize? Nope. That's a big one. Photosynthesis only happens when there's light. It's how they make their food. But they respire, use that food for energy 24 hours a day, just like we do. They need oxygen for respiration, too. Okay. And what about environmental impact? Is it just big factories causing problems?
Well, industrial pollution is obviously a huge issue, but the cumulative impact of billions of individual choices matters immensely too.
How we use energy, what we buy, how much waste we produce.
Exactly. It all adds up. Individual actions are definitely part of the bigger picture, both the problem and the solution.
Right. Final stretch. Science measures and understands our universe. Measurement seems key here.
It's fundamental to understand things like forces, time, light, motion. You have to be able to measure them accurately.
Let's start with time. How did we first get a handle on measuring it?
Early methods were ingenious but approximate. Sundials using shadows, water clocks, clepsydras using controlled water flow, hourglasses with sand.
Clever ways to track the passage of time based on consistent natural processes.
But then came modern methods. Mechanical clocks with gears and springs were a huge leap. Then electric and digital clocks using quartz crystal vibrations.
Yeah. Atomic clocks.
The pinnacle of precision. They use the predictable oscillations of atoms to define the second itself. They're essential for things like GPS, synchronizing networks. Modern life relies on them.
Okay, let's switch to light and shadows. Light lets us see, but what is it?
Fundamentally, it's a form of energy. And a key property mention is that it travels in straight lines, rectilinear propagation.
And because it travels straight?
If an opaque object gets in the way, it blocks the light, casting a shadow behind it.
The shadow is basically the area where light couldn't reach. And its size changes depending on distances.
Right. How far the light source is, how far the object is from the surface. This plays out on a grand scale with eclipses.
Celestial shadows. A solar eclipse is.
The moon passes directly between the sun and Earth. The moon's shadow falls on a small part of Earth, blocking our view of the sun.
And a lunar eclipse.
That's when Earth passes directly between the sun and moon. Earth's much larger shadow falls on the moon, often making it look dim or reddish.
Cool. And here's a fact flash about light speed. Sunlight takes about 8 minutes and 20 seconds to get here.
That's right. So we're always seeing the sun as it was over 8 minutes ago. It emphasizes the vast distances involved.
Which connects to that higher level concept, light as electromagnetic radiation moving at the universe's speed limit.
Yeah, see, it's a fundamental constant of nature.
Okay, finally, Earth's movements and consequences. Our planet's always moving.
Two main motions. First, rotation. Earth spins on its axis like a top.
Takes about 24 hours. And that gives us
day and night. As Earth turns, different parts face towards or away from the sun. Simple but profound.
Second motion. Revolution. Earth travels around the sun.
In an elliptical orbit, yes. Takes about 365 and a quarter days. That's our year.
And that quarter day is why we need leap years.
Correct. Now, the crucial part for seasons, it's the revolution plus Earth's axial tilt. Our planet is tilted about 23.5 degrees relative to its orbital plane.
And it stays tilted the same way as it goes around the sun.
Exactly. So during part of the orbit, the northern hemisphere is tilted towards the sun, getting more direct sunlight and longer days that summer there.
And the southern hemisphere is tilted away, having winter.
And 6 months later, it's reversed. The tilt is the key.
Which brings us to the final, really important, common misconception alert. Seasons are not caused by Earth being closer or farther from the sun.
Definitely not. While our distance does vary slightly because the orbit isn't a perfect circle, that effect is tiny compared to the effect of the tilt. The tilt determines the directness of sunlight, and that's what drives the seasons.
Good to clarify. So wrapping up this deep dive, we've covered a lot from chapter one.
We really have. From cells to stars, materials to motion, the core idea is that science is this dynamic, connected way of understanding everything.
It's not just facts, it's a process. Observation, questioning, testing.
Understanding properties, how things change, what makes life tick, how our planet works, how we measure the universe. It's all part of it.
And the main takeaway for you, listening, is that your own curiosity, your own questions, those are the real tools.
Absolutely. Hopefully you now have a really solid foundation for seeing the science that's happening all around you every day.
So we'll leave you with this thought. Now that you've unpacked these basic building blocks and processes, what's the next thing you're curious about? What new questions pop into your head?
Where will that curiosity lead you next? Keep asking.